From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Go down. Go down. There. Hit that one.
This one?
No, yeah, that
media
one.
Player?
Hit that one. Go down. Go down. Go down. Let's see. Keep going down until you find Bob. Keep going. A little bit more.
Eggs.
You're in there somewhere.
I know.
There you are.
There we go.
Hit that.
This is the best introduction we've ever had.
You got to hit pause.
Okay.
Did you hit pause?
Yes.
Okay, they're good. All right, you're good to go.
All right, you ready?
Ready.
Oh, hey there, children of the night. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in a night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape not wearing?
Yeah, here's the thing, Bob.
Your cape's missing.
My cape is missing, and
the great caper cape.
I think there's a caper.
The caper cape. The cape caper.
Now, I remember specifically, I thought I put it back in the cubbyhole last week. Now it's not in there. Now,
someone stole your cape.
Either if it's been misplaced or...
Someone stole your cape.
Somebody stole my cape.
That's your signature. Folks, this is an outrage. Make sure somebody finds Count Panic's cape. That's very important.
And these are not even my glasses.
Those ain't even, I was like, do you even wear glasses?
I don't even wear glasses.
I was like, I've known you for 10 years. I never knew you wore glasses up until this moment.
I had glasses, but I don't have my cape.
Well, forever normal guy, Tony Panic.
What? It's not about the cape, though, Bob. It's about
the swagger.
The mystique.
Oh, that's fine. Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob. How's it going?
Oh, it goes well. It's nice to see you, as always.
Yeah. Rocking and rolling here. Another episode of Bob After Dark.
All right, let's start off weekend update. Count, what'd you do?
Weekend was pretty good. It was like a whirlwind, Bob. You ever had those weekends where it just happened so fast?
Blink and it's over.
Yeah, blink and it's over.
That's pretty much what happened to me. This past weekend, I did. Did you do anything fun?
I blinked.
Blinked and it was over.
It was over. Yeah.
Saturday, I did a. I co-hosted Paranormal Guys podcast with Neil from Graveside. I co-hosted his show with him on Saturday, pre-recording for an episode he's got with some really cool investigators that are developing some really interesting tech.
Yeah.
I helped him co-host that, and then I hung out with the Queen of the Night, played some disc golf. Worked on Bob After Dark stuff, which is really cool to bring up. I don't know if you saw the news.
Saw a lot going on.
The Bob After Dark shop is opening, like, soon. Like, we're finalizing designs.
I've seen that, yeah.
Yes, we're really excited to be launching the merch shop so you guys can buy. I think we're launching with zip up hoodies, pullover hoodies, t-shirts, the three quarter length sleeve ringer shirts, baseball caps maybe, and tank tops. So that's what we're going to be launching with.
And tank tops.
Tank tops. So John called last week and wanted a tank top. So we're going to get him a good tank top.
This is a part of the Bob After Dark birthday bulletin board. John's birthday.
Is it today?
It's today.
Now, listen, I don't know if he's going to be listening for his birthday, but
he's going to be listening.
If John, I'm just quick. If you're going to call in, I'll make sure to sing to you, man, because
you're going
to
sing.
I'll sing to John. John's a member of the Bob After Dark family at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's sang in years.
What are you talking about? I sang recently. Didn't we just sing on the show a couple weeks ago?
I don't know.
I don't remember. What did we sing though?
Oh man.
We did something back to back.
Auld Lang Syne?
That was it, yeah. The last episode of the new 2023, we sang all.
Who knows all the words, though, oddly?
I just know the chorus. Yeah. But I've sung recently.
You did.
All right, we have a caller on the line.
It might be him.
John, can you just say yes if it's you?
Yes, it's me, Bob. And whatever, what better way to spend my birthday than listening to Bob After Dark? I really and truly mean that. I had the puppety left. Go ahead, Bob. Sing it. Go ahead. I'm listening.
John, happy birthday to you. Hey. Happy birthday to you.
Wow.
Happy birthday, dear John. Happy birthday to you from all of us at the Bob After Dark family to you.
Pretty good.
Thank you so much, Bob. I really appreciate that. And hey, all the years you've been on, I think twice I missed.
Yes.
Even on my birthday, hey, I'm you know, I tuned in and I'm going to keep on listening and, you know, big fan of you and the count and, you know, hope you have a good show this evening. That's all I got
to
say.
John, and this show is going to be dedicated to you. Thank you so much for calling in.
And you know what? I encourage all your listeners that called in the past, not only to call tonight, but to wish me a happy birthday, but to call and talk to you. So let's double the calls tonight.
I appreciate that, John. Also, before I let you go, size of tank top.
Oh.
I would take a large, Bob.
Take a large. We'll get you a setup. I'll pass the details on the count to pass to you, okay?
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Absolutely, sir. You have a good night. Happy birthday to you.
You too. Thank you. Thank you.
Man, John turned 21 today.
For his birthday.
Now, for his birthday.
Now, for the shop, one more question about the shop here, Bob.
Yes.
It's not live yet, though, correct?
No, it's not. We're finalizing proofs. Shout out to the Queen of the Night. She's been working overtime to make sure that the shop goes, like, live. She's been working on prints and graphics and proofs and making sure things are running smooth because graphic design, like graphic you throw up on the computer, does not translate the same as it does on the clothing.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky that Vix is like jumping on it and doing whatever she's got to do. So I appreciate her. But the shop should be releasing soon.
Wow.
Yes.
When the veil is at its thinnest.
Yes. And by soon, I mean there's a potential it might launch later this week.
Well.
But I don't know yet.
We can't confirm nor deny.
Can't confirm nor deny that yet, but there's a potential. If it's not late this week, it might be next week. But either way, the store's coming. Like, we're almost there. It's already done. The Bob After Dark Patreon, I think's launching next week. We're working on finalizing the details for that. There's going to be a $1 tier, a $5 tier, and a $10 tier. Mm. And each tier is going to have something different that you're going to be able to experience and enjoy. I will give a quick sneak peek at what one of them are or what one of them is. What's the correct English there?
I'll say is.
Is. Which one of them is, would you like to know?
What is it?
The drink stream. So I'm going to have for the $10 option, once a month, me and Dr. Ben Vanderson are going to kick back some beverages, some adult spirits, if you will, and we're going to be doing ghost stories and paranormal encounters and stuff, but we're just going to be very, very, very not normal Bob After Dark territory.
So this is not for families.
That's not for that won't be for families, no. But okay. For if you're looking to do something like really exclusive Bob After Dark content, that's going to be where that one's going to be. There's going to be other things. I'm going to be doing tarot readings for the $10 viewers. They're going to get free swag. $5 are going to be able to pick the games I play on Patreon or for the Twitch stuff. One lucky listener a month or two lucky listeners a month are going to be able to pick the topics that I cover on the main show. So those are just some of the things we're talking about. And of course, I'm not going to make you guys pay like an arm and a leg for content. And, you know, even the lowest thing is $1 is going to get a shout out on the show, which we could appreciate. So that's coming soon because, you know, your boy needs some funds here. So
there you have it.
Yep. And I got to give a shout out. Thank you, everybody that's been supporting the Twitch stream so far. It has been such a fun journey. I am so thrilled to be doing that. And guys, shout out to everybody on the official Bob After Dark Discord server that's chatting up in the live show discussion. You guys are about to be able to go and chat with everybody in the I lost my train of thought. Everybody that's chatting up in the live discussion thread. And
people are chatting.
Yeah, people are chatting. So you too can join the Bob After Dark Discord. Links in the latest post on the Bob After Dark Facebook page. So go there, join the Bob After Dark Discord, and chat along with other Bob After Dark fans.
Simple as that, Bob.
Simple as that, man.
You make it look too easy.
I try.
Wow.
Anywho, Count Panic.
Yeah.
Did you know if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we have some things we have to discuss.
What is it?
So Bob After Dark is your weekly, I'm going back to saying weekly, weekly paranormal show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Count Panic's favorite additive to water.
Oh.
What's like, your favorite, like, you know, are you a lemon guy? Do you throw
a little?
Lemon.
I like putting a lemon in my water.
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
But some people prefer, like, you know, add a little sugar and lemon to get some lemonade out of it, you know?
But then that's just, that doesn't that in turn just make it lemonade, Bob?
A lemonade is just very sour water, buddy.
Okay. That's, I think you just need a little bit of lemon in it, honestly.
Yes, but some people prefer, like, those flavor packs, you know?
Yeah,
you get, like, Crystal
packs.
River, Crystal Lake, Crystal Light?
Crystal Lake.
Whatever. They make the flavor packs, yeah. Or you get the Sonic has the ocean water ones.
Yeah.
So some people prefer that. I, myself, am just a fan of regular old water.
Like, straight up?
Straight up.
On the rocks?
Virgin water.
Oh.
Virgin water, dry.
Okay. Is that what you do when you go to the bars?
No, I do not. Maybe after a couple regular, I'll switch to virgin water on the rocks. But
you'll get laughed out the order. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, Count Panic, real quick, too, because it was brought up in the Discord.
Yeah.
You're getting merch, too,
on the merch store. I've heard the rumor mill is running wild.
Yes.
Yeah.
Count Panic is will be getting his own merch that people are going to be able to order too.
Maybe I could order myself a new cape.
We need to find your cape, man. This is weirding
me out.
This is
a mystery. This is going to be like a Bob After Dark mystery episode.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in my April Fool's like phase.
I bet it was that darn Sam Michael.
It might be. I just hope no one threw it out, or I'm going to be fighting somebody.
No. I hope not either, Bob. You can't just find it any. You can't find just a cape anyway.
No, and that's a nice cape too. Like, I'm not even joking. All right,
Halloween star cape.
We split the show up into two parts. First part of the show is the weird, spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for the weird and unusual in headlines. Anything from paranormal like encounters, ghosts, or cryptids making it into major media, strange discoveries in archaeology, weird advances that borderline on science fiction. We cover all of those kinds of news stories, and then we dive into the lore of the week. That's the meat and potatoes of the episode, as we call it. Meat for the Count, potatoes for the Bob.
Yep.
And we dive into a specific topic for the evening, and then we're out.
Yeah, that's what happens. Yeah.
By the way, folks, our phone lines are open. 219-845-1100. That's 219-845-1100. I want to hit 10 callers.
Okay.
So we have 9 more to go.
Okay.
And I was just informed that I screwed up on something because my favorite additive to water is not just water. I totally blanked on this.
What is it?
Liquid IV.
Oh.
Liquid IV. I'm specifically a big fan of the grape liquid IV. Listen, Liquid IV, I know you sponsor podcasts. I know you sponsor YouTube channels. Holla at your boy. My DMs are open. You can you can sponsor Bob After Dark. I will drink. I drink that stuff exclusively now as it is. So can Liquid IV slide into those DMs, man. Anyway, so I want to get 10 callers tonight. 219-845-1100. Do whatever it takes. Hit those 10. We have 9 more to go.
Yeah.
Call in to say hi. Call in to say bye. Call in to say you like us. Tell us a ghost story. Yeah. Ask us questions. That's what the hotline's for. It's there for me and Count Panic to actually do some work.
There for us.
I'm joking, of course.
Us and them.
All right. You ready to start the show?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we already started the show, but you ready to dive into the actual part of the show?
Let's dive.
Okay. So our first news story is actually sent in by James from Peoria.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. He sent me the video, so I found the actual article. This is from Wink News, written by Annette Montgomery. Cape Coral residents see mysterious green light lasers. A colorful night or possibly something more, it's not something you see every day. Casey Sutton was driving home from work in Cape Coral on Sunday night when she saw an airplane overhead. But it wasn't your typical flight pattern. It was just going back and forth with the laser beam and it scanned over me multiple times, Sutton said. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Sutton saw the plane for hours around midnight Sunday night. Philip Bertiglio and his wife Lisa saw a plane the same day in their backyard only a few hours earlier. When it came by, you would see a green laser spread out like it was mapping the areas, and it kept going in a north and south direction, Philip said. And it would just go further west. It kept going north and south and would come back. People who live here saw mysterious laser flights on 3 days in a row. Wink News reached out to several agencies, including City of Cape Coral, Lee County Port Authority, Florida Division of Emergency Management, and Southwater Florida Department. These agencies are conduct and test data and collection in similar ways, but these low-flying planes with green lasers do not belong to any of them. Casey Sutton decided to purchase flight radar to help track down the people behind the plane and its lasers. It shows what kind of plane it was and what type of plane, but I don't know who owns it, she said. It just says private owner. Wink News put out this information into the FAA's website and found that this plane is registered to Randingo LLC in Delaware. We have not been able to talk to anyone with this company. The U.S. Geographical Survey is doing some mapping and data collection involving low-flying planes right now, but their planes do not fly during the day. They also do not use green lasers. Wink News also reached out to the National Oceanographic and Astronomic Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, but they have been unable to confirm nor deny that the planes belong to them specifically, which in Bob terms sounds like that it belongs to them specifically. Hashtag panic stake.
Yeah, this is the whole thing, right? One of our favorite things, just lights, right? Things in the sky. It could be something, could be nothing, could be a little bit of both, Bob. In this case, it seems like they kind of might have a good idea of what it possibly could there. But that's really essentially at the end of the day, some old school Bob After Dark news right there.
Exactly. What do you think it was?
I'm going to go with UFO.
Even though they were able to find the plane and see that it was registered.
Well,
to
come on,
a corporation?
Bob. Let's have our cake. I need it too.
Yeah, I think it's. I'd be extremely concerned if I saw a green scan pop up over my like own self while I was walking. I'd be extremely concerned. And if I found out it was a private company, I'd be very livid. Mm. You know, if it's extraterrestrial, what am I going to do? Call their hotline and be like, can you not scan me? But if I find out it was a private company shooting some sort of green barcode scanner at me, I'm going to be grumpy. Do we have a caller?
We do not, Bob.
Oh, you're like hunching over the phone, I thought.
No, I'm just hunching over.
Oh, okay. You are right. Yeah. Without the cape, you're just like turning into this guy I don't even know.
I know. Well.
All right. So you think it's a UFO?
Sure.
You are the easiest person in the world to talk to.
I could be convinced.
Okay. Also, let's move on.
I want to believe.
You want to believe? I do too. It's interesting that they were able to find out that this plane belonged to an LLC in like America. And it was actually tracked by the FAA, so it's not like this was, you know, a UFO, but nobody knows what's going on with this green laser beam. And I for one, would be grumpy.
Freaking laser beams.
Anyway, let's move on. Next story comes to us from The Lad Bible, written by Beck Oakes. A scientist give verdict on humanoid creature discovered that people believed could be alien. Pictures of alleged alien were sent by anonymous source to Spanish UFO research, Joseph Guadalajara. I believe we talked about this briefly. Mm-hmm. Right around the time that the United States had their big congressional hearing about UFOs and extraterrestrial life, this story came up where they found this mummified corpse thing. Do you remember? And the Mexico government like brought it forward.
I do remember that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they believe that that scientists believe that might actually be not of this world. So let's dive a little bit more into that. In our ever-ending search for evidence for extraterrestrial life, it is suspected that the mummified fetus found in Colombia could either be an alien or tiny humanoid from 800 years ago. The alleged alien has an elongated skull, slanted eyes, and an unusual number of ribs. The body seems to have 10 ribs on each side compared to a normal human's 12. It was discovered in Colombia with pictures sent in by anonymous source to Spanish alien researcher Josep Guadalajara. Guadalajara confirmed that it died in the fetal position, but it is cautious to call it alien. And a post on X, formerly known as Twitter, which, by the way, is that like the prominent word name for it now?
When did we
start? Like, you know, the artist formerly known as Prince? It's like X, formerly known as Twitter. Like, was that a proper thing? I'm just going to call it Twitter.
Yeah. And I mean, when can we stop?
Exactly. It's every news story we cover these days that'll have that. It's just they'll call it X, formerly known as Twitter. It's so silly. The veteran journalist and UFO researcher wrote, "My source told me it came from Colombia. I can't know exactly because I lack verifiable data. I am sure someone in Mexico would have already given it the label alien," Guarjara wrote in, a news article last week. I can't pronounce this for the life of me because it's a Spanish like periodical, I believe. ESPACIOMISTERIO. I can't pronounce it. Hey. And I'm not going to even attempt to butcher it. In my case, I prefer to be more cautious, he added. Guadalajara is also open to the idea that the specimen may be a tiny humanoid related to the Ata, an infamous alien-like corpse unearthed in Chile in 2003. Last year, Barcelona-based UFO hunter Ramon Navia Osorio Wheeler, who had purchased Ata from a treasure hunter, shared his theory that the remains were evidence of a race of tiny humanoids. They were very small people who lived in caves and only came out at night, he told Spanish television, hence the strange almond-shaped eyes. A native friend from the Aymara tribe told me that these beings used to live with their ancestors before Spanish settlers arrived. Guadalajara expressed an openness to the notion that the skeleton may be a member of the tiny race of people who were said to live in the Andes approximately 800 years ago. He wrote, the researcher Gilda Mora from Colombia said that she's had news of these beings since the time of the Spanish conquest. Even today, there are references in, to them in places called El Cerro de los Enos, or the Hill of the Dwarves in Colombia, which is very difficult to access. However, researchers have previously called the theory behind Ata absurd. In 2018, Professor Ceylon Harcrow, a biological anthropologist at New Zealand University of Otago, published an analysis critiquing the Ata alien believers. We estimated the length of the femur, and we estimated that the fetus would have been about 15 weeks in euro gestation, Harcrow had explained to Daily Mail. Based on this assessment, the skeleton most likely belonged to a fetus of a premature infant that died less than 4 months into pregnancy. Skeptical scientists believe that the most recent discovery is also just that, remains of a fetus. And with that, the search for alien life goes on. Hashtag panics take. Fetus, human fetus, or alien?
Wow, this is two. Is it an alien story back to back? It seems like. And Bob, who am I to ruin the fun right now? Alien.
Look, man, I've showed these pictures before. There ain't no way. Now listen, I only play a scientist on TV, so maybe I shouldn't say ain't no way. But let's rewind. In my humble opinion, as a scientist on television, this skull, this body structure looks like something straight out of a horror movie and not a fetus. No, absolutely
You're
not.
You're going with alien.
I'm not. I'm going with tiny humanoid creature.
Really? Okay.
Cryptid, more or less. Maybe not cryptid, but we talked a little bit about the concept of elves back in, you know, during the Christmas episodes back in December. And we talked about, like, where, you know, the belief of elves come from, that they're tiny, you know, humanoid race, right?
Yeah.
And that was all the way out overseas in Europe, in Nova Scotia and whatnot, correct?
Yeah, Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia, which is not in Europe. That's in Canada, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got the, it's, what do you call that? Finland, it's the three islands. I can't think. Anyway, but out in that neck of the woods is where the elf stories come from. And now we have this. So I'm going with the concept that here we are. I'm going to say relative human size now. And there's even reports of giants these days. Who's to say that there's not a race of tiny humanoid people?
Ah.
And we're even getting these stories passed down to us from the natives in Latin America as well. You know, natives were saying that, you know, their relatives lived with these people all the way up to when the Spanish came to Mexico. and other Latin American countries. So I'm sticking with the theory that it's a small humanoid, maybe not alien, but definitely maybe it was alien originally, but at the time I'm going with small humanoid.
Small human, that works.
But you're going with alien.
I'm going to keep it on the aliens.
Sounds good. All right, you ready to move on to the next new story?
I'm going to go with alien.
You're going to go with alien?
Whatever this third story is, I'm going alien.
No, what if I told you that we might be on the prethesis of fighting Atlantis?
Oh.
All right, so this comes to me, or comes to us, from NPR, WBEZ, right here in Chicago. Scientists scanning the seafloor discover a long-lost Stone Age megastructure. This comes to us from Ari Daniel. In the fall of 2021, Jacob Gearson, a marine geologist now at Leibniz Institute of Baltic Sea Research, was teaching a one-week field course at the University of Kiel. The class was conducted entirely aboard a research vessel on the Baltic Sea. Gearson prefers the open-air classroom. It's a bit intense, he says, but for some of the students, it may be the best time during their studies. During the night shift of each evening, students map the shape of the seafloor at high resolution. Usually, if we go somewhere and do these measurements, says Gearson, then we find something interesting. This research crews proved no exception. One night in the Bay of Mecklenburg, off the coast of northern Germany, the students fired up the echo sounds and mapped a swath of the seafloor. The next day, we downloaded the data, said Gearson, and it was then that when we were sitting together, we saw that there was something on the seafloor. It was something special. They didn't know at the time, but not quite 70 feet below the surface, they'd stumble upon a stone wall more than a half mile long that dated back to the Stone Age, one of the oldest such megastructures on the planet. In research published in the PNAS, Gearson and his colleagues say that this piece of ancient hunting architecture may have been used to corral and hunt reindeer, adding a level of sophistication to the prehistoric hunter-gatherers who lived 10,000 to 11,000 years ago. Now we're calling it the Blinker Wall. Gearson was used to seeing rocks and stones show up on the echo sounder as bumpy anomalies scattered across the bottom of the Baltic Sea, left behind when glaciers retreated from the northern Europe thousands of years ago. But back aboard the vessel of the Bay of Mecklenburg, he could already tell that what he was seeing was different. You saw that there is something that kind of meanders through the map, he says. It was a ridge that ran for 0.6 miles, which is kind of a lot. I thought it's very likely that these rocks, one next to another, lined up, he says. A year later, his colleagues and a new batch of students returned to that same site. They lowered a camera down and confirmed that this ridge was made up of tens of thousands of rocks that formed some kind of wall standing about 1.5 feet tall on average. It's usually small stones like tennis balls or soccer ball size, but so easily movable stones. But then there's places where we now have large stone in the direction. He called it the Blinker Wall, as it was under underwater mound called Blinker Hill and could have been formed naturally. But now people are saying that that how would have a prehistoric human built some kind of wall like that to corral things? Because it was not like simple structure. This had some like architectural integrity behind it. And how did it end up on the bottom of the ocean floor? So they're saying that this thing could be 11,000 years old, just sitting down,
just
there,
down
perfectly
there.
Intact. Yeah. Hmm. Are you okay over there?
I'm in my seat.
You're like clicking things. I don't know. You got me nervous.
Bob, there's no storms going on. I guarantee it this time.
I'm just making sure you're not nervous.
No, why would I be nervous?
But yeah, no. So not necessarily Atlantis yet. Yeah. But the more and more they're researching this thing, the more and more they're trying to find out why. This is ancient. This is old. And it's pretty much sitting intact underwater in the Baltic
Down
Sea.
There.
It's tough because the way they designed it, and the way they're more and more, as they're discovering more and more of this wall, is that the way it was designed is almost like they were able to predict in which pattern the reindeer would be running year after year as they added, levels to this wall.
Reindeer. Yeah.
That's what they were hunting, was reindeer. Or at least they believe it was reindeer back then. I think this is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, hashtag panics take.
Bob, I'm going to say, hunting, to try to track down reindeer, that's horrible, right? I mean, Blitzen and Comet.
Cupid. Panic.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Besides the reindeer part. Yes, this is terrifying, Bob. There is something down there. I mean, scientific, there's stuff down there. But if it ever comes time where we have to do battle, I don't know if we could be able to equip ourselves, Bob. We might be a little too over our heads here.
Underwater, you mean?
Again, oh, that's a good one.
Absolutely.
Good, there you go.
So, yeah, no, it's interesting that even in 2024, we are finding discoveries that literally change the course of, maybe not the human race, but it's definitely changes how we previously percepted our ancestors, like ancient ancestors. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just so fascinating to me that we're able to find this wall and it's intact underwater. And people are saying, well, how did they learn how to build something like this? Did it come from alien tech? Just like when they talked about, you know, the pyramids. Did humans actually build the pyramids? Did they get help from UFO stuff?
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
Well, man, well, that's a whole different entity right there within itself. How were those pyramids made, Bob?
Well, that's a conversation for another day, Count Panic.
That's a whole podcast.
Because I believe it is time.
You want to believe.
For a break.
Oh.
You ready for one?
Let's do it.
All right, Count. Stick around for our live fans. We'll be right back into our podcast fans. Stay seated. We will be right back after words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And we're back. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
What did you do during break?
Bob, during the break, I went back in time and I found out how the pyramids were made.
Oh, how did you find out they were made, man?
Very sturdy ladders and okay. craftsmanship by the hardworking people.
You know, I took up deep sea diving.
So you tackled the sea issue. I tackled the pyramid issue.
Yeah, I took up deep sea diving.
Yeah.
In order to like go discover the lost city of Atlantis.
What, did you discover it?
No.
Oh.
All I discovered was some rocks and sand.
Did you ever find I don't know. Anything else out there?
Seaweed. Fish.
Okay. Yeah.
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 Good talk.
Well, you're a globetrotter. Not at the Harlem Globetrotter.
The Harlem type, huh? By the way, folks, our phone lines are open. 219-845-1100.
Call in.
Call us now. How about now? I'm joking. All right, Count, you ready to dive into the lure of the week?
Let's dive.
No pun intended from the water talk?
Yes,
or all pun intended from the water talk?
Yeah.
You okay over there?
Yeah, why not?
You seem deflated.
No.
You need a hug?
No.
Do you need a hug, man?
It's been a long day, Bob. Know, it's 9 o'clock at night.
You're not even looking at your watch. We don't even have a watch on.
True watch. I'm just glad we're okay from last week.
Last week was terrifying.
People were...
I had people legitimately reaching out, making sure we were okay. We had callers checking in on us.
People said, we heard, we know Bob's afraid of dolls, but he's also afraid of storms.
I'm not overtly, yeah, I am kind of afraid of storms.
It's terrifying.
It's terrifying. And lo and behold, a tornado like actually touched down not far from us.
How about that, Bob?
That was so, like literally when I got home, I went to sleep. And then the next morning I woke up and lo and behold, Paul Goddard from Region News Source posted somebody took a photo of a tornado ripping through South Hammond.
Would you say that's probably one of your finest broadcasting?
I would say top three most memorable live broadcast of my life. That we had to go from spooky show to weather show real quick.
Just like that.
And I'm, you know. And it also just happened to be Tom Skilling's like last day reporting weather too.
This is him passing the baton off.
Exactly, to the next group. So
he's like, I want Bob to take over.
I am not a meteorologist, man. You guys would hate me as a meteorologist.
I think are they the most hated occupation? People hate meteorologists.
Meter maids.
Meter maids.
Meter maids.
When do you see a meter maid walking around?
Have you never gotten a ticket?
Yeah, but isn't that kind of an old school thing? It's all digital now, right?
You still get please, go tell that to the people who get boots on their car. You say, hey, is that boot digital?
Well, it's like the thing about the milkmen. There's no more milkmen anymore.
They are. They just deliver to the stores.
Yeah, but they used to come to
the... You know, was my old man's first job? He was a milkman. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Where, at Whiting?
East Chicago.
East Chicago,
Roxana.
Delivered milk in Roxana?
Roxana, East Chicago, and the harbor. He delivered milk.
Why don't they bring back? You know what? That's an occupation that needs to come back.
Delivering milk?
Milkman.
I mean, they still deliver milk. It's just you go to the store for it.
No. The guy comes, the horse and buggy.
Well, my dad didn't drive a horse and buggy. He drove like a truck, I guess.
Okay. Well, I'm going back a little bit before that. Before that, there was a horse and buggy. They'd go to your house. Oh, how about this? We're getting off track. But how about the gas station attendants who will come out there and put the gas in for you?
Count, you're being nostalgic for an age that is long gone.
We had one of those left in Roxana when I was a kid, and that was about it. But
all right.
Think about the paranormal occupations out there.
Radio host. Podcaster.
That's a...
Ghost tour hoster. Metaphysical seller.
How about like a paranormal milkman?
Paranormal milkman. I don't know. That's
think about it, Bob.
It's a career to say the least. Yeah. Speaking of food.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about the lore of the week being the meat and potatoes of the episode.
Yep.
When I say potatoes, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Oh, French fries.
Okay. That's valid.
Chips.
Think of when I say potato, what location do you think
of?
Idaho. Idaho is correct, actually. Yeah. Tonight, we're for the first time in Bob After Dark history, we're talking about an interesting location in Idaho.
Haunted potato?
No, it's an actual weird haunted city by a really haunted strange lake called, ironically, Spirit Lake.
A haunted city by a haunted lake called
Spirit Lake. Idaho. So the Spirit Lake, the city, Spirit Lake, the lake. It's all one thing.
Wow.
And it's an extremely remote city. And it's got some really cool stories behind it. And, well, it's got two stories. One about the lake itself. And two, we're going to be talking. This one's a little, you know, bonus for you guys. But I could not talk about it. It's so cool. But let's talk a little bit about the tragic story behind the haunted lake. This is written by Jennifer for onlyinyourstate.com. Idaho's most haunted places don't have nationwide reputation of our neighbors, but they definitely exist if you know where to look. The stories that surround these hotbeds of paranormal are eerie, passed down through the generations, locally respected, and oftentimes a product of Native American source. But one look at this foggy, densely forested lake, and you'll see exactly why this gem is considered one of the spookiest places in Idaho. On an ordinary day, this overlooked lake town engulfed by dense forest and waterfront beauty, North Idaho has come to known for its quiet and self-sufficient nature. While opportunities to explore the town are year-round, many folks come here for the Empire Trails, a networking of bike trails that take you deep into the trees. You good over there?
Just sitting down.
But the lake, without a doubt, is the heart and soul of the community. Since the lake and town share the same name, few people realize that there is an eerie story behind these deep, dark waters, a haunting local tale that has been passed down from the generations. In fact, Spirit Lake is reputed to be one of the only two lakes in the world with a sealed bottom, making it a perfect location to hold the earthly trapped souls and phantom spirits that are said to haunt its beautiful depths. Legend has it that the lake was once called Clearwater, but a tragic story experienced by the Kootenai Native, so that's Kootenai, who once lived by the lake, changed its name to Tessamini, or Lake of Spirits. Here's the legend. A chief of the Kootenai tribe had a gorgeous daughter, Hayampan, or Fearless Running Water, who loved a young warrior, Hash'it El Amehum, or Shining Eagle. Unfortunately, Haipam was promised to the rival chief's rival tribe's chieftain as a peace marriage, which her father had consented to avert war. The two young lovers vowed their eternal love, nonetheless, binding themselves together with the marriage chain of rushes, and they leapt into the lake. The two lovers were never found, and local folklore tells that on a moonlit night, when the wind is still, you can still see their ghostly silhouettes as they drift slowly across the lake in a phantom canoe. Every spring, low, mournful, and haunting sounds can be heard drifting through the foggy mist that hover above the water. Many claim the voices are actually the cries of the two Native American lovers as they seek freedom from the Lake of Spirits, but it never comes. And that's just one of the tales of the lake. I have another one for you. This comes from Reddit, by the way. This is from Reddit user SaberTracker from Our Ghost Stories. I'm going to read this word for word. I'm going to make this post not a ramble jumble of words. Sounds like a Bob Anderson thought. However, I make no promises due to the topic of this post. I thought you all may enjoy the stories of what I think is to be a paranormal hotspot, Spirit Lake, Idaho. Spirit Lake is a small small town in northern Idaho with many haunted houses and much talk of ghosts. Before I get to the deep digs of paranormal activity in the area, I would like to put out a little background to content of this town. I fully want to disclose that all of this information I'm providing is word of mouth, except for how the lake was named. Before it was even settled, the Kootenai tribe, we talked about the Kootenai tribe and how he promised his daughter off to marriage and then they jumped into the water. On top of this eerie tale, there are many deaths and memorials around the lake. It's exceptionally weird because I've been to many lakes in northern Idaho and being an avid fisher, and none nearly as many memorials or graves like this. I only confidently know three stories of death in the lake. One was a 7-year-old boy swimming in the shallow water who got tangled up on weeds and drowned. I always wondered about why weeds that can easily pull and drown him down. The lake bottom is very muddy and stuff like that, and things don't root well down there. Maybe he just panicked and couldn't pull up, or maybe, just maybe, something held him there. Another was your classic backwoods trespassing high school bonfire party. There was a junior who was drunk and no one noticed him falling into the water. How did he not make a sound? Sound echoes a lot in the area he was in. There was no loud music because they didn't want to get caught. Did someone jokingly push him in and thought he was well enough to get on his own? Did he slowly fall in and no one noticed? Or did something or someone pull him in? The final story I know is a drug deal gone wrong. Two teenagers were fighting over pot money and it was winter, and the other got violent and pushed him in. The water's very shallow and iced over. He got trapped under the ice. Most of the memorials by the lake, by the way, are teen males. The negative energy is added to by the negative apparent practitioners that live there. And of course, the practitioners always get a bad rap, but I'm going to read it anyway. There are, they were known for animal sacrifices and, let's say adult-orientated rituals. Yeah. Many of them in the 60s would stop people on the highway at night and try to convert you. They are still there to this day. I live two houses down and would wake up to chants and no correlation to the moon cycles. The family women were not allowed to get out. The father and uncle were perverts. They dressed in old-fashioned farmer clothing in browns, grays, and blacks. The woman would always wear bonnets. To this day, many animals go missing in and around Halloween, which is bogus, by the way. I know they do so everywhere, but they tend to be more noticed in Spirit Lake more than any other bigger neighboring towns. Why does everybody always give the metaphysical practitioners a bad rap, guys? I'm telling you, most witches are like trying to just like go to sleep on the couch in the morning, not let alone like causing havoc. Most of them are like excited to be handing out trick-or-treat candy on Halloween, I could tell you that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, hashtag defend the witches. They do nothing to you guys. Been persecuting them for way too long. But anyway, Spirit Lake started out as a logging town and died shortly after. There are many old buildings left and is advertised as a beautifully historic downtown Spirit Lake with Inland Empire trails on the local radio stations. It also has many haunted buildings, the old theater that is now a new florist shop, the White Horse Saloon, which we'll talk about in a little bit. a rundown building next to the elementary school, a greenhouse next to the park, one commercial building that is recently no longer standing behind a local hardware store. Many locals claim that they have both negative and positive spirits haunting their houses as well. And the Spirit Lake is full of good, honest church people. It is widely accepted that ghosts are everywhere, and we pray constantly for protection for us and our neighbors of the people that live up and around there. There are two mountains nearby that also have paranormal and alien activity, Rathrum Mountain and Hoodoo Mountain. Lights, ghosts, and Bigfoot reports frequently come in from all over the place in those mountains, all both negative and positive experience. I have been hunting out many times in the Hoodoo area and inland paper land as well. I haven't had any paranormal experiences really, but have seen how a Bigfoot could be hiding. There is so much wilderness in pocketed areas that would provide much coverage and good hiding spots. I haven't had really any paranormal interactions with the area, I think. There was one day I was completely distraught and walked through the woods, and the woods felt comforting and more reassuring than usual, but I'm 90% sure that's just because I love being outside. I do know people in groups who have seen stuff that I completely agree with. They are honest, old-fashioned, and churchgoers. I do recognize that Spirit Lake has above average drug use and may cause some of the paranormal interactions, but I do feel a negative energy in certain areas from the sorrow and dark behaviors that land has said that land has, and think the druggies feed the paranormal activity. Some things are just inexplicably complicated and unknown. While Spirit Lake is haunted by many, it also blesses many with beautiful land, plentiful hunting and fishing. It's a tight-knit community that looks out for each other, but does not defeat the fact that there is some weird stories that go on there. Apparently, other things that go on in the area as well. Many, many moons ago, there were, let's just say, some really terrible people that were racist and not good people doing really horrible things there as well, and that contributes to some of the negativity on the land. And it's very interesting because this is a extremely remote area in Idaho, like very remote area. Mm-hmm. And the fact that this small logging town has so many ghost stories attached that a lot of people's neighbors and everybody are saying that this place is something going on there. If there is a lot of, if they built a lot of that area up on native burial ground, it is very much possible that this entire town could be, one hotbed for paranormal activity. But it's interesting because other than me doing and digging into this research for this episode, I have never heard of Spirit Lake, Idaho leading up to this point. But it sounds like, from the gist of it, that this is probably one of the most haunted cities in America, if not the world, if the entire small community is haunted by something, including but not limited to the lake itself, and topped off with Bigfoot sightings.
Well, to add that to everything else.
Right, of course. You doing okay over there?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts so far?
Well, I was going to say, to add that to everything else, Bob, Bigfoot on top of everything.
Right.
There's a lot going on.
What's that?
I said, adding Bigfoot. Are you okay over there?
Are you okay?
You seem distant tonight. But adding to the list of everything else going on, Bigfoot's as well. That's crazy.
So I found another little add-in thing before we talk about the last haunted location on the list for Spirit that I thought would be interesting to cover. This is from IdahoHauntedHouses.com.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that was a website.
I'm sure every state has.
I'm going to read this. This actually was just posted on February 8th of this year. I'm going to read it word for word. This is from, it's a review from anonymous user. I was down on the hunt for friends in my old gold Ford Grand Marquis car with four friends looking for our high school buddies, and they weren't where the meetup bonfire and drinking spot we usually party at. So just reading, it's a long run-on sentence, just bear with me. And we turn around by huge looking window. Long story short, there looks to be some sort of weird creature that was spotted over there by a green gate out in the middle of the woods. This thing, like, walked on its hind legs, had red eyes, bottom half and arms and legs were formed, but not humanly. Every limb was turned backwards, and half of everything else was twisted. And it was definitely interesting. That was in 2013. Not the easiest parrot thing to read, but the general gist is they were out in the woods going drinking. They couldn't find their friends, but what they did find was a mysterious green gate with a mysterious humanoid figure with all of its limbs turned around charging at them.
That's terrifying right there.
That is a horrifying, like, image in my brain.
And this is in Idaho Haunted Homes.
This is Idaho Haunted Houses.
Haunted Houses, yeah.
But that's just another case. They're saying that this backwards limb creature chased after them. So the last thing I wanted to talk about was Spirit Lake, Idaho also has an extremely old bar and restaurant that is haunted.
Well, of course.
Yes. And of course, I can't pass up a good haunted bar story. I just love those. Those are my favorite thing. It's called the White Horse Saloon and has been the most active paranormal activity of any restaurant in the state. So to some, this is considered to be the most, you know, paranormal bar in, you know, Idaho. This was written by Nikki West, by the way, for 104.3 Wow Country, which I'm assuming is a country station in that neck of the woods. The restaurant and saloon, an 8-room hotel, has been in the area of Spirit Lake since 1908. Hardly anything in the place has changed. There have been no major renovations, so the floors, bar, and much of the interior is still as it was over 110 years ago. Even the creepy iron prison bars that separate the hotel have been there since the beginning. Only in Your State says numerous places throughout the state claim to be the haunted to this day, but only one is said to be Idaho's most haunted with paranormal activity is the White Horse Saloon. But this unique saloon restaurant hotel combo isn't just a local watering hole. Its residents' ghosts are also known to cause ghostly mayhem throughout the building. Lingering spirits have been known to cause damage to the bar with broken bottles and glasses. People have also seen flying dishes, heard disembodied voices, and claim that if you're sitting alone, you feel a presence, you hear footsteps that don't belong to anybody, slamming doors, and much, much more. The most common haunting is a spirit that the locals call Big Girl. Big Girl is a former maid of the hotel whose son died while crossing the street. While she is felt throughout the building, the most activity is around room 2. One manager talked to the CDA press about Big Girl. She likes to stroll up and down the hallway, and she likes to play tricks on people every once in a while, says White House daytime manager Dolly Massender. She's known to be seen in the shadows in the windows from the street. She plays tricks on me in the restaurant and in the dish room, she says. I'll put dishes away on the rack where they can dry. I've turned and one of the plates go flying off, and I just say, Big Girl, knock it off. There's just no way that dish was stacked like that when it was coming to go off. Hmm. So that's just another one of the local, actually pretty haunted locations in the city in Idaho.
Now, did you know before this that Idaho had so much going on?
I'll be honest, no. When I think of Idaho, I think probably most Americans probably think right to potatoes. Right? But no, in this particular case, this one extremely remote city is, you know, a paranormal hotbed that no one really knew about. Mm. And I find that more fascinating than anything. But like I was saying, when it comes to the concept that this is, you know, native territory and native land, it's very possible that this is just sitting on, you know, maybe a couple ley lines and native burial ground. And it may be very well that this is a local hotbed for all these paranormal stories. I find it interesting that the Reddit user who lived there, or apparently lived there, talks a little bit about the concept of these people being, you know, honest church-going folk, but then goes on to say that there's drug use is above average there. So it's, you know, do I believe that all these situations are being, you know, seen by people that are abusing drugs? No, because if you're even having these standard folk that don't that aren't partaking in drugs and they're still having these paranormal experiences, how do you describe it?
Yeah. How do you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
When you have these remote areas and you have, you know, all these potentials going on, it begs the question, is it actually haunted or is it a bunch of hoopla?
Hoopla.
This does not strike me as a major tourist attraction town.
Idaho?
Spirit Lake, Idaho.
Yeah, like just anywhere in Idaho.
When me and you talk a lot on the show about towns or haunted locations, and we talk about what do you gain from lying about it, in a lot of cases, an idea that you and I always talk about is the concept that you lie to draw business or you draw up tourism. But this is in like an extremely remote part of Idaho. I couldn't tell you many folk that are vacationing there like willy-nilly, you know? Yeah. Maybe local folks in Idaho might travel there, and maybe people are doing it for like the trails, but it sounds like the faster you pass through it, the faster you get to your destination, you know? Yeah. And I'm not knocking Spirit Lake by any means. It sounds like a really beautiful place. I'd love to go check it out sometime and stay at this the White Horse Saloon. It's got 8 rooms. It's a bar and a restaurant. It's supposedly haunted. I'm all about it. I want to go check that out. But like outside of people like me, how many, you know, if I said, hey, Panic, are you going to go take a, are you going to take a vacation to Idaho? You might just look at me and be like, probably not.
Yeah, I mean, again, not knocking Idaho. I just don't know anything to do in Idaho.
Well, now we know in Spirit Lake, Idaho, you have ancient native burial grounds and other things. We have a caller.
We have a caller.
Caller, you're on the
air. Maybe from Idaho. We don't know.
Caller, are you from Idaho?
No, I wish I was, though, because Spirit Lake seems to be a very, they got a lot of resorts there. Plus your haunted saloon.
How's it, or is this Frank, by the way?
It is.
Hey, Frank, how's it going? Frank from Joliet's on the line, Count Panic. See, I'm very good at memorizing things.
Right. Yeah, you won't go camping with me. So I think Spirit Lake is pretty good because we can get you into a hotel.
It's an 8-room haunted hotel. So let me give you a quick backstory. Frank and I were helping out on the Windy City Ghostbusters Twitch stream last night, and we brought up the concept of camping. Mm-hmm. And I said, whenever I go out in the woods for like cryptid stuff or whatever, I'll go out with my bodyguard, Dr. Ben Vanderson, and then I go into a hotel, and that's...
You don't stay in the woods.
I don't stay in the woods. Ben might, me not so much. So here's a spot where Frank could go camping. He can tell me what's going on, and then I will go sit in the sit in the saloon. I'll have some spirits, and Frank could report back to me. Have you ever been to Idaho before, Frank?
You know, I think I've driven through it. I've never really stayed. Like you said, it's kind of a boring... Idaho, Iowa, they're kind of boring and like take forever to drive through. They're not like super big touristy spots, but Spirit Lake seems like a very pretty area with a couple different resorts in it. So
absolutely. It might and have it's a little tourist draw to it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's in the north, so I guess you'd travel through that to like get to Washington or something.
Right.
Absolutely. Frank, I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, no problem, Bob. Have a nice night. Good show. I really enjoyed it. So,
you're very kind, Frank. Thank you very much for the support.
No problem. Talk to you.
Talk to you later.
Now, will you go camping?
Nope.
Hold on. Hear me out.
Oh, okay.
What if you could stay in a cabin in the woods? Not a tent.
No, that's fine. I'll stay in a cabin in the woods, okay. But no tent, no roughing it. I'll stay in a cabin in the woods.
Glamping.
Is that called glamping?
It's like when you don't.
No, you're an Eagle Scout, right?
I am. I'm not going to say I'm an Eagle Scout. I am a Star Scout. I was 2 away from the Eagle Scout.
So but what I'm getting at is in your human life, you were a scout at one point.
In my human life, I was a scout. Yes, Bob.
So in your experience being a scout, when you go camping,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know.
Anything spooky?
Anything spooky out there in the woods?
No, I mean, the two places I've been to really was, I went to the dunes a couple times and then Camp Ransburg there. Camp Ransburg just had a lot of bugs. And it was hot, but there was nothing paranormal really going on. I could say a camp ran.
That's fair, but you want to know what is out there? Mosquitoes,
raccoons.
Mosquitoes. I don't mind. Raccoons don't bother me. Mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Spiders. Heat. Spiders. Yeah. I'll stay in the cabin.
Bears and whatnot.
Bears. I'll be happy to stay in the cabin. I'll go back there all hours of the night. Yeah. Like that's fine. I'll stay out in the woods. I'm just not sleeping in the woods.
I think it's just the thing too. Being in the woods in the dark. You assume there's something out there besides you know, you, like, maybe there's like a ghost out there, but I never had an experience, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's fair.
Yeah. But in Idaho, it sounds like you could get a...
If you go out to Spirit Lake, apparently that place is just one big hotbed for ghostly
activity. And plus Bigfoot.
And a Bigfoot sighting, which doesn't surprise me. Any kind of rural area in the country always claims to have some sort of...
I heard
of
Nessie's
Bigfoot
in the lake as well.
Yes.
Idaho.
No, I almost did this episode on a place called Moon Lake. Mm. Moon Lake is a lake that goes between Utah and Idaho. Mm-hmm. And they have a lake creature called the Moonie creature, which it would be our version of Nessie. But we have Champy. Champy is our version of Nessie here on stateside.
Champy.
Yep, from Lake Champlain in New York.
There you have it.
Yeah. Count, do you have any... words of...
Encouragement?
I guess encouragement of leaving, of farewells.
Everybody in Idaho, I hope you enjoy. And elsewhere, Idaho and beyond, hope you have a great night. And
you owe Idaho an apology, by the
for
way.
For what? I didn't dis-
you're, yeah, you're dis- you're, I don't know why I go to Idaho.
I know. I'm just saying it's not one of those states. And listen, we do the show based in Indiana here, outside Chicago. A lot of people from outside of Indiana say, what's to do in Indiana? And there's plenty to do in Indiana. So who am I to say there's nothing to do in Idaho? I'm sure there's plenty to do in Idaho.
Sounds good to me.
How about you?
I would like to go and check this out for myself,
all right,
to be completely frank with you. Ah, no pun intended, Frank just called.
He just called in.
To be completely Bob with you.
Yes. Yeah. Let me be frank
with you. No, I'm Bob.
Yeah.
You're Count Panic.
Yeah, surely you can't be serious.
Shirley, don't call me Shirley.
Yeah.
Folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we want to wish all of you listeners sweet dreams. Mom, good night to you that's listening by the radio. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy and comfortable in doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.